You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast. From Los Angeles, I'm Alex Ferney. I was the guest on the last episode, so this is how it works. And today, I'm the host. And my guest today is Anarejo, who improv fans might know from Fashion Show at Lunch, from Gringo's, show she hosts in the Inner Sanctum, perhaps from Maud Knight, her team Thirst Trap, and from Mess Hall. Ana, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming and doing this thing. I didn't ask you to do it. We were both asked by the same person.
Yeah. Well, you know what? No matter how I got here, I'm glad to be here.
I'm just happy to be in the same space with you and talking about this sort of improv.
It's a real
stuff.
Treat.
So let's jump into it. So I know you and we had a class together, but I don't know much about you in terms of how you got here. So walk me through maybe sort of the greatest hits of you and your comedy career.
Yeah. Actually, you're a big part of it because I grew up in LA and I would go see Convoy when I was in high school. It was my date, you know, because it was a cheap date and it was like pretty cool, you know, to be like, oh yeah, like let's go see a comedy show
on a school night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, second semester senior year, or actually my whole senior year, my mom lived in Mexico City and I was just living with my dad in LA and he was very much like, okay, do whatever you want. So I was always out and about on school nights. So I would go see UCB shows in high school and I saw you guys. And I remember just being blown away by all of the specifics you guys had. And I was like, man, these guys are really smart. So that started. And then I went to...
Great. That's the podcast. Thank you so
much. Yeah, the end. Yeah. So
it was really good. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay.
It was great. I actually took improv in high school and my high school improv teacher and I are actually on the same mod team now. So I feel like there's a lot of like... links to my high school life and my UCB life. A whole bunch of people I went to high school with do UCB stuff. So
that's so great.
Yeah.
How did you find comedy? I feel like different people have different paths to like figuring out that comedy exists, right? Like, so like, how did you get there even in high school?
I was always doing community theater. I was part of a kind of like hippie theater group called the Silver Lake Children's Theater Group, where a bunch of like, I don't know, local Silver Lake parents would put together this like ragtag theater company for their kids, and I grew up in Koreatown, so I wasn't even a Silver Lake kid, but a friend from school was like, oh yeah, like I do this theater thing, like come do it with me. So I started doing those plays just to kind of have an after school activity, and through then I realized that I loved performing and I loved kind of being funny. I remember I did My Man Godfrey, which is a old movie that we did in a play, and I was the mom, and I was like, oh, I love playing these like silly characters, and I love just kind of getting an audience reaction. And I think that's kind of where it started. And then I went to a performing arts high school where I kind of, my focus was in theater.
Yeah.
And then I went to college in New Orleans and started doing sketch comedy there and stand up in New Orleans.
And was the plan for you in your own head be like, yeah, I'm going to, comedy is fun and I want it to be my career? Or was there a moment where you're like, yeah, here we go?
Yeah. Great. So in college, I was a pretty ambitious student. In high school, I would like eat lunch alone in the library and like study and just like I was very academic. And then I got a scholarship to go to college and was pretty kind of like very involved in extracurriculars and you know, just like kind of like obsessed with like accolades and just like really kind of like a type A go-getter, like I want to excel type person. And then I kind of just panicked senior year where I was like, Do I like apply for a Fulbright, or do I join the Peace Corps, or do I Teach for America was sending me emails, and like I was just getting so many different things about what I should do or could do, and I kind of just like imploded and was like, you know what, I'm just going to move home or back. My parents didn't live in LA anymore, but like I'm just going to move back to LA and do comedy because that's what I like.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a reaction to feeling like my like type A straight A bubble had burst, and now I was faced with like, you actually have to choose a path and be an adult, and that seemed terrifying. So the
path to comedy.
Yeah.
Refusing to choose to be
yeah,
an adult.
So I just was like, oh, I'm giving up. And was like, I don't know. I think I was kind of like scared of rejection. I was like, what if I apply for a Fulbright and then I don't get it? Like that will be humiliating.
Yeah,
it would be
sure.
The end of me. Or like, what if I apply to grad school and like, I don't know. I just kind of was like so like high strung and wound up and obsessed with like succeeding that pursuing something that like nobody seemingly succeeded at seemed like the best possible option.
Sure. This is not necessarily improv, but stemming off that, are you a very like goals oriented? Is that the sort of like, okay, so if that was a struggle, what do I do next? And like, it would fail. Is that sort of how your brain works?
I think it was until I started doing comedy and just like relaxed and was like,
that's great.
Oh gosh, you know, I've just been like struggling and working hard and like hustling and grinding. And now like, I think that I feel like I'm kind of like not that ambitious compared to my peers in the comedy world. And I'm just like, hey, if I can like make a little bit of money, go to yoga, shop at Trader Joe's, pay my rent, you know, perform with people that make me laugh.
Yeah.
Great. What a week, you know, what a day. That's all I need.
That's great. And then how long have you been involved at UCB? Like, when did you start classes?
I graduated college in 2015 and came back and pretty much right away just started taking classes. Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, it's pretty casual. I was like, I loved UCB in high school and it seems to be the place, so like let's just take classes, and kind of started moving through the program. And Marissa Strickland was my one-on-one teacher, and she's been just so influential and
such a bad person. Marissa,
she's awful.
She's so mean.
So mean. Yeah. She's a nightmare to work with. God. Well, no, she was probably the most delightful human being I've ever met, and just made me feel so safe and warm and capable and confident and creative and inspired. And I loved going to class every time I had her. And she really just made me fall in love with improv and with UCB and feel like, oh, wow, this is really a school where I want to be a part of it. And I just kind of, you know, kept moving through the classes and starting practice groups and doing indie teams. And, you know, three years later, I'm coming up on my 3-year anniversary. Here we are.
That's great. You're someone I think I don't remember when we actually met. Like, it's one of those, like, I was like, I feel like I knew who you were. And then, like, I was like, oh, hey, you know, and then we had class together and all that sort of thing. But you're someone that I think has had that's a small amount of time in the grand scheme of things, and has had an outsized influence on this world and on this community. I think you've affected it quite a bit. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because I feel like a lot of times these like improv conversations are either focused on the way things were, or like just pure theory stuff. And I've been thinking a bunch about what this looks like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like with DCM is its 20th year, this anniversary, you know, this year and all that sort of stuff. And I want to kind of talk to you about like, you as someone who is been around here, knows the ins and outs and really knows what this world is, but hasn't been around as long as like I've been here for fucking ever. Like how you kind of view what comes next. And the first way I want to ask you about that is for yourself, like not career wise, like we all want to be successful. Okay, great. But like how do you view yourself like continuing to grow as an improviser, or as, you know, in sketch, or just as a comedian in general? Like in a perfect world, like what's that road look like for you?
Yeah. Well, I feel like, again, like most people, this isn't their dream. They're like, I want to be a staff writer. And I'm like, I like just want to be a one-on-one teacher at UCB. Like I want to be what Marissa Strickland was for me.
Yeah.
And something that like I think is funny is that like it seems like you have to get on Herald Night to be a one-on-one teacher.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I feel like most people want to get on Herald Night to like succeed and like get staffed. And I'm like, I literally just want to get on Herald Night so I can be Marissa Strickland.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, like in order to get my job, I have to go through this crazy audition
insane
process
system.
Against 700 people just so that I can teach 101. But that's like, I guess, so like, I guess get on Herald Knight just so that I can be a 101 teacher.
Yeah.
Or like whoever's listening, like, can I just be a 101 teacher? yeah. So I would love to be a teacher. I have a strong background in education. I teach improv to kids. I coach improv groups. Like, I love education and like teaching people. And you know, I'm so passionate about improv and I'm passionate about helping people find what their sense of humor is in their voice and falling in love with this, that I would love to be a teacher. If at UCB, great. If not, like, I figured out other ways to,
sure,
you know, mix education and improv.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a goal, to like just keep figuring out how to do that more.
Then let me ask you this then. Let's say that, yeah, like Johnny Meeks is hiding behind that door.
Yeah.
And he bursts in. I go like, surprise. Like, what's your approach then? You've got a class of 16 101 students of, you took 101, you've been around, you know, it's,
yeah,
a wide range of personality types, especially at that,
sure,
stage. Like, so like, what's your, like, I'd love to hear your approach to that. Like, here's how you,
sure,
would,
sure,
teach this, and here's how you would help them achieve those,
yeah,
goals.
I think that there are the most successful classrooms I've been in have been because there's been a sense of community cultivated. So I think it's really important to do that groundwork at the beginning of class and just establish that, like, hey, like, we're here to have fun and like be people and be humans together and like bond and talk. And I think Jess Eason is a great teacher at this. She always forms such tight-knit community in her classes. And I think that it adds such a level of intimacy and personal accountability. So people show up and they're like, I'm not just here for me. I'm here to be part of this thing that we as a group are experiencing, mm-hmm, together. So I definitely think that, like, community building at the beginning. I also think an openness to talking about things that come up that feel uncomfortable or problematic. I think, you know, all the time things happen that people feel weird about because it's 2018 and we're approaching, people have such different levels of understanding of what is, mm-hmm, cool and what is not cool based on their personal experience, based on how much time they've put into educating themselves, based on so many things. And just kind of like bridging those gaps and being like, hey, like, let's talk about this thing that made us feel weird in a way that feels open and okay and address situations rather than having people feel uncomfortable. So I think, yeah, just like community, open communication. And I think it should feel fun.
Yeah.
More than anything. I was, you know, just, I was tell people all the time, I was like, this is silly. This is crazy.
Yeah.
What we do is crazy. And if it's not fun, why are we doing it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So just that.
What are, like, when you see comedy, when you watch it now, like, and this can be sort of like more abstract things or like specific shows or improvisers or performers or whatever you want it to be, but like, what excites you is like, oh shit, like, that's new to me, that's exciting to me, that's something that I feel like is something I don't get anywhere else, or there's shows or people that you watch and you're like, damn, that's what I want to do, or what I wish, or what I'm just glad that they're doing, mm-hmm, even if I can't, I don't want to put it on, that's,
yeah,
what you want to do.
Yeah. Let me think. I think that I love watching people have fun.
Mm-hmm.
I get anxious watching people in their head.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure most people do. So I think that when I see people who are just performing in this like liberated fashion, I get really excited by, I think, like Wysocki is a performer like that, that just feels like he's always having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Oscar Montoya is another performer, yeah, that just people that are like theatrical and in their body and treating this as not just like, oh, what can your mind and words do, but what can your whole body do? And they use, like, you know, like, I feel like if I were to see Oscar Montoya through like a shadow, like scrim, you know, and, mm-hmm, I just would see like his hand, I'd be like, that's Oscar's hand, because,
yeah,
I know the way he moves his fingers and his wrists, and it's so, you know, he just improvises from his fingernails to his toenails, like, to he's just so in his body, and I, mm-hmm, love that.
Yeah. And is there, like, well, I'll come back to that in a second. How would you describe your, this is a tough question, I know, but how do you describe your, like, style of improvising? Like, do you, if you had to try to verbalize what you do well.
Yeah.
Don't worry about sounding egotistical or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, how would you try to do that?
I love playing characters. I, mm-hmm, love playing big. I love, and I think that's why I have so much fun on Mod, is I love just, yeah, playing big theatrical characters. I'm in a Latino improv group called Gringos, And we recently did a form where we improvised a telenovela, and it was just so like big and dramatic, and there was Spanish, and it was like so just like dramatic and seductive and passion. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like me and my element. I love drama and stuff like that. So I think just big.
That's and from what you're saying before, that sounds like something that comes from when you're like sort of like finding comedy. Like, oh, I like playing these characters. And that's continued all the way through.
Yes.
Do you feel like in your shows that you get to do you feel like, how do you sort of continue growing that? Like, how do you approach, like, this is what I like doing. How can I keep getting better at this thing? Right. Because we can all take classes. We can do that sort of thing. But there's a personal approach that you need to continue improving just for any human being. Do you have a way, or it's also might be
I think just like figuring out the teams that I like performing with. And now, I've been on a whole bunch of different teams and done a whole lot, and I'm very much of the belief that it's quality, not quantity.
Mm-hmm. I very much agree with you.
Because I also am a firm believer that, like, you need to live an interesting and fulfilling and rich, diverse life to be a good improviser. I'm like, I don't want to be at the clubhouse every night.
Yep.
I want to be at the clubhouse. Yes, exactly. It's like, I want to be doing one show a week with people I love at this point in my career. Like, I want to be doing one show a week that I'm so excited about, to be performing with these people that bring out the best in me, and then be going to the movies and to a concert and to out to dinner and on a hike and just living a life. So I think now it's performing with Gringos and Fashion Show at Lunch, which is my all women's team, with coaches that we're excited about. So it's, you know, seeking out coaches that I want to work with, I want to be coached by, and they're excited to coach us, and having practice with those teams and performing just with those teams. And that's not to say, like, I don't love to be, you know, asked to do a mashup. Like, those are so fun, but, like, I don't want to have 6 weekly practice groups and perform 8 shows a week.
I think that's so, I think that's, like, some of the best advice you could give anybody, because no one's ever, like, what I like about that improviser is that they're always improvising.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's not a plus.
Exactly.
But like figuring out, be like, okay, I know what I want to do, and so do these people, and like that's your best bet to be fucking amazing.
Yes,
is working
absolutely
together.
And I think like the best, I don't know, for me at least, I'm like, you know, the my number one priority is my happiness and my mental health. Mm-hmm. And like improv is a very small part of that slice of pie. Of my, like, you know, it's like exercising and cooking and seeing my family and my friends and being, you know, socially engaged and all. There's so many other things. So I'm like, I can't let one slice of pie take over my life. There has to be a balance between all the other things that are important to me.
Yeah. That seems like a healthy way to approach it. What would you say, again, looking to the future? Again, no one knows. Maybe it's all underwater. But like in 5 years, like this world, not just UCB, but like that sort of like improv world and this sort of non-stand-up comedy world, sketch, everything. Like, what do you think that looks like in like 5, 6, 7 years? It's different from now, if you had to kind of guess.
It's so interesting because I feel like in just the 3 years that I've been at UCB, like so much has changed. So Gringos came up with Arcade Currency and Obama's Other Daughters, and you know, we've seen Asian AF and Spanglish Aki Presents and like, you know, Filipino AF, all of these amazing shows have kind of like come up from my peers, the people that I was in class with and have, you know, were like, was at the clubhouse with. So I feel like I'm like seeing what I dreamed of happening already. And I just like, now I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I don't even know. Like just to have it keep happening more, I think more shows, more, and have it trickle into like, you know, I want to see all those people working and whatever their dreams are. So if like they want to be staffed, I want them staffed. If they want to be actor, whatever they want, I want to happen for them.
Yeah.
And I think for our classrooms, I want, you know, teachers that represent, I hope those people will become teachers. I hope I can become a teacher. Just people, teachers that represent what our performers look like and where they come from, having more diversity scholarships so that we can bring in a wider range of people into our classroom. So everyone feels like UCB is a place for them. And that doesn't necessarily mean that every single person that walks in is like, oh, there's a show that like caters specifically to my identity. But just like, oh, this is a place that celebrates inclusivity and diversity. And, you know, so for example, like I go to Filipino AF and I love it. I'm not Filipino, but I get so excited by seeing different cultures represented and people celebrating their culture and their ethnicity.
Yeah. And it has been the last 3 years, that's about right.
Yeah.
Where it's like true. Like when I started, you know, it was everyone looked, thought, and dressed like me. Yeah. And it's the slow, painstaking process to get away from that has been sort of sped up. And you've been a big part of that, helping that along in the past 3 years. And I think that makes those next 5 or 10 years fascinating.
Yeah.
Because the voices are different. And that's going to affect this whole world and hopefully bring in new people that will just wow us in other ways. Because what we did 10 years ago is not interesting for
totally.
Someone. It shouldn't be, because otherwise we were doing a dead medium and why would we waste our time?
Yeah.
When you were coming up, besides us, like, who were people that, it doesn't even have to be like, oh, that was my favorite improviser, but people just sort of like, yeah, like what that person does sort of sparks something in me. You know what I mean? It doesn't even have to be like, oh, that's the funniest person, but you're talking about the way Oscar moves, right? And like that is, so he's the only person who does what Oscar does.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful compliment. Like, who are some of those other people as you were coming up being like, that you can think back to and be like, oh, I would see this person for this thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess I think a little bit outside of improv and into other aspects of my life. So I love like reading and writing and fashion and art and all these things. So there's this fashion blog called Style Like You that I've been following for like a decade. And it's this mother-daughter duo, and their whole philosophy is that like style is not about trends. It's just about like who you are, and like, you know, you can tell a story with your clothes and your closets, and they interview all these cool, interesting people and like with the most interesting and wildest clothes and closets from all over and all walks of life and all over the world. And I loved watching those videos, and I remember watching them in high school, and I would watch them over and over and over again. And I was just so inspired by like these interesting people that had traveled and collected pieces of jewelry and clothes and, you know, inherited pieces from their family and had crafted these things. And it just felt, I was like, wow, like I love people who believe so authentically in their aesthetic and their voice. And I think that that really translates to improv. It's like, or, you know, it's like, I love seeing people and they're wearing something. And I was like, you look amazing. And I can tell that you love what you're wearing and there's a story behind it. And oh, it's just a gift to see. And I think improv is the same. It's like, I love people that aren't trying to be someone else, but are just doing what they think is funny.
Yeah. I think that's like everyone you can think of that's like great. Like that's, you know what they think is funny. And you
yeah.
Because no one likes watching an improviser where you're like, I can't figure out that person. Like, I don't know what
totally.
They like.
Or like this thing that got on my nerves was that like for a while, it was like, invoked to be like baby and I was like, why is everyone saying this word baby? I was like, what is this? And I was so confused. I was like, this is like an improv trend. I was like, this is the equivalent of like wearing like a choker necklace. Or I was like, what is this horrible thing that everyone is like decided is a trend? And I was like so not into it.
Trying to figure out where that, like last year at some point I was talking to someone trying to figure out like what was like the egg of that? Like,
I have no idea. I don't know, but I just kept seeing it everywhere. And I would go to shows and I was like, if I hear this word one more time like and so yeah, so I think it kind of goes, I was like, yeah, I think trends like that, I'm like, I don't want to hear everyone say baby. I want to hear what you think is funny in your way of saying it.
What is for you, like as you were coming up and like going through classes and everything, and as you were helping find your voice, like what was the hardest part of improv? Like what was the thing you personally struggled most with?
I think justifying, like I think learning the mechanics of the Herald structure was hard. But then after being on two mess hall teams and coaching, I'm like, you know, like I feel much more comfortable.
Yeah.
I think coaching actually really helps you. I've learned so, just in a year of coaching, I've learned so much.
I think you learn so much more coaching and teaching than you do being coached or taught.
Yeah, exactly. It's incredible. And
also
like,
keeps you honest. Like, you can't do your bullshit if then you turn around and say, don't do my bullshit. You're like, fuck off.
Exactly. Exactly. So I've learned so much about, you know, justifying and just like clean game play through coaching.
Yeah.
Which I think when I was learning, it takes reps. I think it really takes reps. And I had someone ask me like, oh, like, you know, I'm trying to take 301. Like, should I take 401 so I can be eligible to audition for Harold's? And in my mind, I'm like, honestly, like, and again, someone that's not on a Herald team, so like, whatever. But I'm like, the thought of being on a Herald night when you like are still figuring out how to justify and are like, sounds so stressful. I was like, oh gosh, like, who wants that anxiety every Monday night? Like, if you're still learning, that doesn't sound fun to me. Like, it seems, especially because like 700 people auditioned for this coveted slot. It's like, you want to be there when you're relaxed and having fun and exploring and, you know, so I'm always like,
that justification thing, like partially what you were saying before, oh, yeah, like playing characters and everything. And like, yeah, a lot like I'm right. Like the other pole of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like where it's hard for me to then play big characters and I can just be a justification robot if I want to, you know? I think it'd be interesting to sort of unpack that of like, what was hard for you about that? Like, what was that like, okay, this doesn't just come instinctively to me right away?
I think because it's the thing that, it's the thing where you have to do the mental work of like, okay, so what is my philosophy? So you can have, let's say you're doing organic or premise-based scene, you know, you're like, okay, we have our who, we have our what, we have our where, we know what's going on. We have this first unusual thing. Someone can label it. We can call it out. We can frame it. And then that justification is like the last step that really, and that will, can pivot the scene.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, that is my first game move the whole game, or is it one game move for a justification that then becomes the game?
Sure.
And that pressure like stressed me out. I was like, oh God, so like, is this a game of like, someone that wants jelly beans to be everywhere, or like is wanting jelly beans everywhere, like the first game move of a justification that I don't know yet, and I need to like figure that out.
Yeah, and I think especially too, like obviously you're as a performer much more than this, but if you're approaching it from a character place a little bit more, there's also the danger that the justification might strip some of the fun out of that character away. So like, this character is doing great, people are liking it, and then there is the danger of if you justify, not in the wrong way, but in a way that doesn't actually like heighten it, then people go, oh yeah, okay, yeah, she's reasonable now, that's less fun.
And I think like, because I like playing characters, I lean on the crutch of like, this game is just a saucy woman that loves jelly beans, you know, and we're just gonna see her jelly bean it up, and like,
why complicate it?
Yeah, exactly. So I never really like come up with these great justifications that lead to new things. I'm just like, well, how many silly ways can I say jelly beans? Yeah. And like, it'll be fun, and I'll get an audience reaction, and I'll kind of leave being like, okay, that worked. Like,
And well, what you're saying before too is, so like, talking about doing that form that was like a telenovela, is there are so many different forms you can do, and you kind of need different skills for all of them. And like in a form like that, and then actually a lot of genre forms, you get to play more. Like it's less about, let me really verbalize this. It's not like a Herald. You're not coming back and doing this three more times. You get to be this character and exist in this moment and like do the scene first over the pattern. Which makes sense to me. You know what I mean? Like you, everybody, not everyone needs to do approach things in the same way, and they shouldn't, because that'd be a bummer.
Totally. And that's kind of why I'm not like, I never really like get super hard on myself. Like sometimes I see people like really like bummed out about things. I'm like, hey, you know what? Maybe I'll never be that great at justifications, but somebody else is great at them and loves them. And that's why we all do, we all bring different things to the table.
It's also why there are teams.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I was like, you know, so I'm never like, God, you're like, I'll try and think critically about it, but I'm always like, you know what? If I'm always just doing big silly things, like fine, someone else is gonna we're gonna hold it all together.
Sure. Now the sort of flip side of that, and if that was sort of like what was hard for you, sort of coming up, like what I'm going to guess this is probably going to be character based, but when you're going through those classes, like what was the stuff you were most drawn to in the actual classes as you're going through, like what was the stuff where you're like, yes, like this is helping me, this is making it more fun for me, or interpret help any way you want. I don't want to put my own thing on that. Was there anything in those classes you're like, this was a click moment for me?
I think getting tools to approach Heralds differently with. So I think Andrew Hansen is such a great coach, and he's really good at equipping his teams with, be like, hey, these are, this is your tool belt, these are all these different things, these are different ways you can approach a Herald. And he come, and I feel like I try and emulate him as a coach, where I'm like, okay, like I want to have one sort of focus for the lesson today, and and so he would be like, today we're just going to focus on weird world things, and that's just something that you can use to inform your second beats. And I was like, great, that's just, that's very digestible.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in just focus on one thing every practice or every show or every class and, you know, sit with that for a bit and marinate and try and implement that in your show. And eventually, like, all of those different days of marinating on different things will come together and you'll figure out what comes out naturally.
How do you, because you do sketch and improv.
Yes.
What separates the two in your brain, if anything? Like, how do you approach Maude different than an improv show? Or if you're writing your own sketch for other purposes, what are the differences in the way you approach those two things?
If any. I guess Maude, it's just so fun. It feels like camp in some ways. I'm like, I just love that we're like a bunch of adults like putting on wigs and costumes and like memorizing lines. It just reminds me of like high school or camp. So I feel much more a sense of kind of like community and camaraderie with my Maude team than I did perhaps on my mess hall teams. Maybe because mess hall is only 6 months, but yeah. I feel very invested in like, this is a show we're putting on and there's so many different moving parts in terms of tech cues and sound cues and costumes and lights and lines and whatever. There's so many things going on. Whereas improv, I'm much more relaxed about improv. Yeah.
Is that something that, do you think there's a way to combine those two feelings? Do you think like you could like take what you like about that and take what you like about improv and create something that is like, you know, your super being of a comedy show? Like, do you think they are fundamentally separate?
No, I think that they can exist together. And I think we do. We see a whole bunch of variety shows that I think work really well. And I definitely think like there's this feeling in Maude where like it's like right before you're about to go on stage, you're like, okay, it's showtime. Like there's this very like, okay, like center stage feeling of like, come on, everybody, like break a leg, you know? And I try and channel that energy when I'm doing an improv show that I think might not go well. So I did a show at a brewery and it was like my all women's group. And there was like people heckling and like people walking in and out. And it was like such a nightmare. And I was like, this is going to be a disaster. And I was like, instead of us going, like accepting that it's going to be bad and giving up before we've even begun, I was like, okay, girls, like, let's knock them down, you know? And just really like, let's just decide to put on a fucking show.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if you're...
You cannot swear on podcasts.
You can't?
Just so you know. Absolutely not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the government will come.
So that in that moment, and then we had a great show, and we killed it because we just decided, like, let's take this seriously. Let's treat this like a real production, and we had so much fun. So I think I'd bring those theatrical elements to improv sets.
One of the things that I think is... interesting about this moment too, like as sort of like a new generation of performers is coming up, is like the opportunity to break out of this is what the shows were, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so this is what Harold Knight was. It shouldn't always be exactly that. This is what a team that moves off Harold Knight is, or this is what Convoy is, or whatever. And to create your own sort of voice of show, and like that's, you know, you describing Maude that way and how much fun that is, and you describing the way you like to improvise, feels to me like that is like the seed of something that I'm not sure that I'm only going to speak for this here. I'm not sure what you're describing is something that we have here fully on the improv side, right? Like, but it is something, and I think that's one of the things that gets me excited about looking at the future, is being like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, people who are coming, like, that's what you love doing. You bringing that here and be like, I'm going to just do what I love doing, because why would I not do what I love doing, is like going to inspire the next 17-year-old who's coming to see a weekday show. And I think that's really exciting to hear. If you could put together like someone's like, you know what, we have a weekly slot and it is free and oh gosh, we don't have time to like worry about it. Do whatever you want. What would that show look like?
Mm.
And don't feel like you have to include your current teammates.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that I don't know. You know, I would love to incorporate the teams that I coach in some way. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm super inspired by this team I coach called Cornbread Kitchen. And it's been such a rewarding experience where a lot of them, I awarded a diversity scholarship to, and then they like moved through the program and they came to the diversity jam that I host, and I kind of just have like seen them come together and grow and like be amazing. So I kind of am also like, I feel like I just want, I don't know, I want to like put it in the hands of the next generation. Like I feel like even now at this point, I'm like, even though I still feel so new, I'm like,
yeah,
oh gosh, like I got to do Gringos and I got to do Fashion Show at Lunch and I've gotten to do, you know, some of the things that I want to do. Like now I want to see what other people can do.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. So I think that I would, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know what I would want to do.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's another thing is like, because this all stem from me being like, well, I don't know what to do with my life. I'm not that like, okay, like what's my next move at UCB? You know, I'm just kind of like, I don't know, like whatever feels fun. And right now, just like performing with Gringos and performing with Fashion Show at Lunch sounds fun. And if I could figure out a way to integrate the teams that I'm inspired by, that I've kind of helped develop a little bit, like that would be great too.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So then let's talk a little bit like specifically about improv nerdiness.
Great.
What was the best note you ever got? Or what was a great note? I don't want to, let's not superlative it.
I think Jess Eason was someone who made me realize like I was good at character. She was like, you're good at playing characters, but the character is not the game. So let there be a game along with your character. And that was like, oh, okay. Like the character is just there to support the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that really helped me realize like, oh, like it's not just a silly voice and that's what's unusual.
Yeah.
It's like your silly voice has all of the other things, you know, you need to have an unusual behavior. And
then if we're like, because we just had class together, it feels like I'm like poking you in that way. But like, so like how do you in your work now, like apply that? Like how does your brain, you might even be past a point where you have to like consciously think it, but like, so you get that note. Cause I think that's like a great note for like a lot of people, you know?
Yeah.
Like what helps you go, oh yeah, okay, here's how I can do this thing that like Jess was trying to get me to do.
I guess
and it's okay if the answer is like
I guess I think like you like going through the mechanics of just being like, we need to know who we are, we need to know where we are, we need to know what we're doing, we need to have what is the unusual thing, and let's frame it and let's not leave that moment until we both know what is the unusual thing that we both agree on. And that's something I notice a lot while coaching. I was like, these two people do not know what they're not on the same page. And I can see it so clearly.
Yeah.
And coaching makes you realize that. So now I'm like, okay, I need to be on the same page.
Yeah.
And I think just doing all of the, and then once we have that unusual thing, what's the justification? Let's rest the game, all of that basic stuff. And then I just put a character on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, when you coach or watch shows or whatever, are you more drawn to like improvisers who do play character-y? Like, does that echo in like what you laugh at, or would you say you laugh at people who don't do what you do?
Yeah, I think that I want people to put on a show always. So I think it doesn't need to be some like insane, off the wall character, but I think like, you know, if you're being a dad, like just, you know, the way a dad,
be a dad.
Yeah, like how are your shoulders, you know, what if you're a receptionist, show me in your body that you're doing that. Just make any choice and I'll buy it.
Yeah. And then when you're coming through, I don't want this to seem like anyway, like put someone on blast, but like well, okay, what about this? Like what are sort of bad habits that as you're going through classes, you kind of see either yourself or sort of other people coming out of classes with, like, and maybe they can come from notes that get misinterpreted or things that like notes that you got that kind of set you on a wrong path. Like a good note can do that.
Yeah.
You know,
so
I'm not saying anyway, judge all your teachers.
Yeah. I think that I am drawn to people that are reacting authentically and emotionally. And when I see people with this sort of like ironic detachment, or that I just don't believe them, that they're actually listening and actually reacting,
mm-hmm.
it gets on my nerves. So I try really hard to just like really just treat everything real. And when, you know, so I think that like, and I don't know if that I.
Where do you think that comes from? Because that is a pretty common issue for a lot of people, especially classes like, and obviously different people come from different places, but it is so common that, do you think there's anything that kind of creates that or triggers that? Or what do you think that sort of, the ironic wall between characters or between improviser and character stems from?
I think that I used to do that a little bit, and I think it was an insecurity, not trusting in the process, and that watching someone be a real human being was enough, but it totally is enough. And then once I started coaching and watching more shows, and I was like, oh, like, one, not only is watching someone just listen and react more than enough, watching someone ironically detached is so annoying. And yeah. And you're like, what are we even doing here? Like, if you don't believe in this, why should I believe in this? Why am I here at the clubhouse at 11 p.m. on a Monday watching some person that doesn't even believe in what they're doing? And I think it's because I like was when I was in the like, I'm going to do improv every night stage of my life, I felt like my time was being wasted because I was watching people not commit.
Yeah.
And that made me like angry. I was like, I want to watch, like, even if you're a turtle, like if you just believe you're a turtle, like I will watch you be a turtle.
Yeah.
But I hate watching you like be like, ha ha, like I'm kind of a turtle. I'm like, no, like, I want to be, if you're going to do that, let me go to sleep.
Although to be fair, the line, ha ha, I'm kind of a turtle is a very funny line. Yeah, that makes total sense. Cause that is such a common thing. Like that's more common than people who are mainly character based, is that sort of like,
yeah.
Well, and I think you're probably right. It's probably like a doubt or fear or insecurity thing preventing them from sort of attaching to it. Do you remember what it was that kind of like got you over that? If you had that a little bit, was it just confidence? Was it something else?
Probably just reps. Probably realizing that scenes were never fun to perform in that way. My scene partner never seemed like they were having fun. The audience never, like, it was like, no, this is fun for no one.
Yeah.
And my philosophy on everything is like, it has to be fun. It has to be fun. So now I'm just like, what will be fun to play? So when I coach, I really do a lot of like acting exercises. Like we're improvisers, but we're actors as well because we're performing on stage. So like we have to be good actors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think just watching people and feeling it in myself, being like, this doesn't feel good.
Yeah. That is one of the things, maybe I said in the class, but like in improv scene, you have to like, you're the writer, obviously, and you're the actor and you're the director, and you have to do all three at the same time. And that's one of the things that makes it hard. And you do see how many people like miss out on one of those things, be it the okay, I'm going to be very writerly or whatever. Maybe that's close to Billy's Pirate Ninja thing. But if you could give it, not just to anybody, but if you give advice to like you in 101, what would it be?
Slow down and listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times I was afraid of quiet on stage, and I was afraid of just like, you know, I felt like I had to be talking, or my scene partner had to be talking at every moment. And now I'm like, that's totally not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now my like number one thing is just like commit and listen.
Yeah.
And back then I was like, respond and go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's would be a very helpful note for a lot of people starting out.
Yeah.
They people race.
Yeah.
Now you've been doing this for a long time now. Like at this moment, when we're recording this, like what are you working on in your own performance? Like in your own, give me improv or sketch actually. Is there something you're like, okay, right now, this is what I'm trying to get better at.
I guess I host the jam every Friday at 6 p.m. And hosting a jam is like a whole new can of worms that I recently. So lately, that's been my main focus because I do it every week. And I feel like it's a lot of responsibility because I'm like kind of facilitating this experience for a lot of other people, and a lot of people that come there are students in 101 and 201, and I want to make sure that they have the best experience possible. So I've been thinking a lot about how to be the best jam host I can be and how to set other people up for success.
Yeah.
So how I can, you know, help like see a scene and see if it's missing a justification or a label, or see what it's missing and how I can supplement that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of like support other people.
Do you feel like that's bleeding into the other work you do elsewhere? Because that feels like if you're have to kind of be the hawk, or better animal metaphor, if you have to be the sheepdog sort of herding just to a certain degree, keeping us in the pasture, like, do you feel like that creeps into Gringos or
yes,
a fashion show?
I think that it, I think that earlier in my improv days, when I felt like things weren't going well, I would panic and be like, no one's stepping out. Well, I guess I got to step out. And like, I would just be like really aggressive. Not even aggressive, just like eager beaver.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like aggro vibes. It was just like, okay. Like I would like initiate a lot of the scenes. And I think hosting the jam has really strengthened the muscle of like, hang back, let the students figure it out and, you know, and figure out what the most effective and minimal way to support is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's kind of like made me a more supportive player and less a like, okay, let me edit and initiate, because I feel like this, you know, so it's just made me a better teammate, I think.
Great. That's a good thing. And then I guess this is probably the last question, but like when you finish, when you walk off the stage or finish a show or whatever, like, and it's good, what do you consider a good show? Like what makes you go, yeah, that one felt good. Some of it is always going to be intangible or like the audience liked me, you know, like that's of course, but like for you personally, you know, what are the goals when you walk on stage that when you achieve them, you're like, fuck yeah.
If I was connecting with my scene partner and we both felt like we were having fun and we were taking care of each other and we were trusting each other, like that's what I love so much about improv. Everyone's like, oh, do you do stand up? You know, like what? Or I guess my parents are like, so you do stand up? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
but like why I love improv as a group is like, I'm like, 'cause it's all about the other person. And like, if you can make your scene partner feel good and they can make you feel good and safe and you guys just gelled and had a great time, that's the magic I love.
Actually, there's one other thing I forgot that I want to say. Is there a difference in how you approach it beyond just like their grownups and their children, like with like teens? Like when you were starting and you were seeing shows in high school, or if you're like teaching this to like kids, like what, how do you approach that? Is it different than a bunch of 30-year-olds for
you? Yeah. Well, I think that's different. Like the teen improv classes I teach are most of the students' first introduction to improv.
Yeah.
So a lot of it relates back to that community building, like creating a space where teenage boys can come and feel creative and carefree and safe and relaxed and loved and create, you know, all of those things. So that's and it's so funny because over the past school year I was teaching an improv class in Spanish, and it was to like all boys and like two girls. And I just like loved that these teenage dudes would come and just like get to come out of their shell and be weird and try on different characters. And so it's not even for that. I was like, we're not going to worry about game. Just, you know, any of that. I just want to make sure that you have a space where you can come and really let go.
Yeah.
And trying on different, you know, playing with voice and your body and. You know, in Latino community, there's a lot of kind of gendered expectations in terms of what you look like, what you sound like, what is appropriate for men, young boys. So I wanted to create a space where I was like, come be feminine, come explore other parts of yourself that you might not feel comfortable exploring at home or in your school.
Yeah. I always think like when you start teaching improv, so much of it is undoing some bullshit that got built into kids.
Totally.
And, like, adolescents and pre-adolescents. Like,
totally.
Like, it's not, it's like to the point of like, touching.
You
still see it in when like two guys touch each other.
Totally.
And like they're weird about it. And it's like, touch his shoulder.
Yeah.
And I think that, that hadn't occurred to me, but of course, teaching it to teenagers, that's when that's like most on your mind. You're trying to hit norms and you're trying to learn what it is to be a person.
Yeah.
It feels to me like it'd be a good tool to help kids kind of like even that out, you know what I mean? Like to like be expressive and
totally,
and
they love, you know, it was such a fun thing where it was great. It's like I got to work on my Spanish, they get to work on their English. It's like a, you know, English language immersion class. It's great, and we're having fun, and one of the students is taking 101 with Marissa Strickland now.
Great.
And, you know, they come see my shows and I'll, you know, take him to see shows. And we've just kind of created this really close bond. And I was like, this is great. Improv did this.
Oh, that's great. Well, cool. I think that's a good spot to end that. Yeah.
Great. Okay, thank you great. So much.
Wonderful. Anna, where can people find you if they want to find you on the internet?
They can find me on Instagram at anna.raho, I think. ANNA.RAJO.
Great. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you for talking to me. And that was a long form conversation. Tune into your next episode when Anna will be your host. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter at Fernie, Alex written out. Have a great day doing whatever you're doing right now.
Oh, bye, guys. Thanks.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.